Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Spirit Travels Radio. I'm your host, Karen Miles, and this is my co-host and good friend, Jolene Bratson Treadway. Hello, Jolene.
Hi, Karen. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing this evening?
Doing fair. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
I want to tell everybody who we're going to have on this evening, and we're going to talk about a couple of things until he does call. And his name is Farron Blakely. He is a Native American artist, and he's just an amazing artist. He has a Facebook page, so I would highly recommend anyone to check him out.
Mm-hmm.
That's who we have, and it's going to be an interesting show. We're going to talk about how he got involved with art and when, and a little bit about his life, and we'll go from there with the show this evening. But in the meantime, I believe that we will discuss Mary Queen of Scots and her ghost that has been seen around the castle. I personally am very fascinated with her. I read a story about her years ago, and I found her life to be hard, very hard for a queen. You know, and you wouldn't think that a queen would have a life as hard as she did, but she had a very difficult life. She lost her father when she was 6 days old and was crowned 9 months later. So, you know, she was a very young queen. Married at least 3 times. I can't remember exactly how many times she was married, but and then eventually, as everybody knows, she was beheaded. But anyway, are you ready to go into this discussion, Jolie?
Oh, yes, I am. It sounds so very interesting, very historical. A lot of history that many people aren't aware of, you know, and the paranormal activities within this castle. And I'm most interested to learn from you what you have studied about her and read. It's going to be very interesting for me.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking about it, and I think you're going to be fascinated with her as well.
Yeah.
All I can pretty much say about Mary, Queen of Scots, is, you know, that it was that she was a very articulate type person, but she was also the type of person that you really didn't want to deal with, because she was, how should I say it, she was stern in her word when she made a choice. But I think what led up to her demise was her cousin, which would have been Queen Elizabeth, felt threatened by her. Didn't want her to have the crown. Didn't want her to take her crown. Basically,
wow.
They were two different countries.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how she ended up being beheaded later on. But what I found that was kind of interesting was they had thought that she had something to do with the death of her husband, which happened to be her first cousin. It was Henry Stuart, Lord Darnley.
Okay.
And they were very unhappy. It was an unhappy marriage. They were never happy with each other. But I'm looking at notes to tell this, because there's just so much about her, you know, and about her story that, you know, one would pretty much have to look to give this information.
Right.
In 1567, there was an explosion at their house, and then he was found dead. And it was apparently, he was strangled. They said apparently strangled in the garden. And soon after, she married James Hepburn, who was the fourth Earl of Bothwell.
Oh.
And now, please excuse me for me getting tongue-tied, because I tend to talk. When I get excited about stuff like this, I talk too much or too fast, and then that's what happens.
You're fine. It's very interesting. You know, when you said Queen Elizabeth, is that the elder Queen Elizabeth of today? Not Prince Charles's mother, but her mom. Okay. See, these are the things I'm not. This is very interesting, because this is now I'm learning something, and this is. This is great. I'm very. It's very. It takes you. You almost. You know. You take the listeners and take them and travel back into this historic time in their country and what, you know, goes on inside the castle. You know, then as it would today. And I think it's wonderful to listen to.
Then I love, like I said, I love this stuff. There's a lot of history to it. And, you know, the odd thing about it was they believed that James Hepburn, her second husband, was believed to be the one that killed the first husband.
Oh.
And that came, it came following an uprise against, this was following an uprise against the couple. And then she was imprisoned at Loch Leven Castle, and she abdicated in favor of her one-year-old son, James the Sixth.
Mm-hmm.
And she did not regain her throne, and then she fled to England. And
okay.
She was asking for protection from her first cousin, once removed, Queen Elizabeth I of England.
Okay.
And it was whose kingdom she had hoped to inherit. And see, Mary had previously, in this part I did not know, she had previously claimed Elizabeth's throne as her own, and was considered the legitimate sovereign of England by many of the English Catholic. So by her doing this, and she was, in fact, a threat to Queen Elizabeth, that was what brought about, you know, her demise and the beheading. But she ended up, you know, and she spent 19 years in custody in a numerous different, you know, just a number of different castles and manors in England, and then she was tried and executed for treason, and that was an alleged involvement in 3 plots to assassinate Elizabeth.
My goodness. Well, in the paranormal aspect of it, what went on then? Did she see activity and basically live with it, or is there more activity today than there was then?
Well, it is believed that there is activity in the castle today. There has been sightings, and they do believe it is her that walks these halls, because she did die a very tragic and sudden death.
When
they took her to the block, to where they were going to take her head, she began to pray as they put her over the block, and she prayed the entire time. But it said that even after the axeman took her head, and mind you, it took 2 swings, he did not take her head with the first swing.
Oh my goodness!
I know, and I could not imagine.
No.
And but her lips were still moving as though she was in prayer. This was after they had taken her head.
What did they do with it after they? I mean, did they destroy her head, or did they? Back in those days, I'm assuming maybe. It's just my opinion. Maybe I'm assuming they kept it. What did they do with it? Did they put it? I know that many historical people like that in those days kept it. Is that what they did?
I would think that was what they done. In most cases, back in those times, they would take their head and display it.
Yes.
So that others would know, you know, don't. And it was kind of used like it's almost like they put it there, and it was almost like a warning for others, you know, this is what's going to happen to you if, you know, you question my rule or my whatever. So I would think that was what they had done to her. But they said that she, you know, she spent the last hours of her life in prayer and writing letters in her will. She wanted her servant to be released and that she was to be buried in France. And a scaffold was to be erected at the Great Hall that was 3 feet tall and draped in black. You know, it was just a matter of thing, and I just could not fathom living in that time with the harshness of the punishments that they gave out to these people, because you had the block that they beheaded people on. You had all these other little crude things like the,
right.
the thing that they used to stretch people. They would stretch them until their arm broke and all that.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just one thing right after the other that they did. And then, of course, there was the infamous little box that had the stakes in them that they would close them up in, and it would continue to close until it pierced their bodies.
Was it mostly women, or was it women and men?
It did not matter. It was women or men, whichever one. I mean, if they had done something that was against the kingdom, then, you know, they were punished. And a lot of times they were tortured before they died.
Because I know in that time of history, they accused women of more than they ever accused men of. And that went for anything from witchcraft to adultery to so many different subjects that they weren't even guilty of. They were innocent of these things, but it seemed as if even our culture, we call it the moon cycle, they would consider them crazy and those type of things. And I feel that, you know, even back then, and then if you look to today's history, this is the first thing that came in my mind, was that we still, you know, we see the queens and the princesses and the princes of England and today, you know, such as the beautiful late Princess Diana, and you see how much she suffered and we lost her and so on and yet Prince Charles's mother and grandmother, you know, seemed to hold the seat of England and London and so on. And it's very interesting to see now how the power reversed itself.
Mm-hmm. It is. And you know what's strange about the whole thing is, but I can see this. Now, she was 45 years old when she died. And
that's
at 45
young.
Years old, she was considered, I know, but she was considered old.
Oh, my goodness.
She was old in that time, because they didn't survive, you know, as long as we do today. So, you know, there was a lot of people that, you know, a lot of people died at young deaths, you know, whether it be cut their fingers on something and end up with an infection in their body because they didn't have the antibiotics like we do now.
Right, right.
Take care of that.
Right. No, they didn't. Didn't they use different herbs and things that I guess with infections like that actually didn't work back then. You know, they tried to heal them and mend them, but they didn't have the correct antibiotics, and therefore they would get, you know, very sick. And that's where you would see even on the movies that they have of long ago where the fevers and things set in, and that's so interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they used to use leeches.
Oh,
and that was a way that they would get the toxins out of your body, you know, and help heal that person. And that's actually something that, that still happens today, you know, in some places. I'm not aware whether it's done here in the United States still or not, but I do know that practice is still in use today in certain areas. And, they did. I mean, it was just kind of nasty, you know, to let them put leeches on your body and let them, you know, that was the way you were going to get better.
And that's
but it didn't
the way
always
they,
work.
They would put the leeches on the body, and in other words, that would suck the poison out. Is that what they used it for?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's amazing, because I know that when my father was stationed in the military, He was stationed in Puerto Rico for 4.5 to 5 years, which I lived in Puerto Rico with him during that time in my childhood. And whenever it would rain, the leeches would come out, and that's how I became familiar with them, because they would come out only when it rained. So it was for us kids, you know. But at the same time, we did have to be careful, you know, because if they attached themselves to you, it took either a lot of strength or a doctor to take them off. So I'm amazed that they even used them back then. That's amazing to me.
And they did. A lot of the medical uses that they practiced then were crude. You know, I mean, compared to what we do today, and very unsterile, very dangerous. A lot of people lost their lives, you know, simply because the conditions were not good, were not clean.
Right.
And, you know, and it could have been as little as a splinter in their
mm-hmm.
finger,
mm-hmm.
you know, and go to a doctor, and the doctor used something that he used on somebody else. You know,
exactly.
And that person may have had something, and it caused an infection for the person that went to have it removed.
Right.
So, you know, it was just a terrible time, and I personally am glad that I did not live in that time, because childbirth alone, they had a high rate of death during childbirth, and then even after. There's a story here. In Kentucky about a woman that was, I believe it was the late 1800s, and she was married. Her husband owned a hotel, and her baby died. And they buried the baby, and then there was an issue. I think the baby survived till about 6 months, and then he became ill, and that led up to his death. But she became comatose. She didn't respond. There was no nothing. And mind you, even then, they could not tell whether a person was actually alive, whether their heart was beating or not. So
right.
if they got no response, then, you know, they're dead.
They considered them dead.
They considered them dead, yeah. And they buried her. I'm not sure exactly, because it looks like it's been a while since I've read this story, but this is another one that fascinates me as well, because they go back out to the grave. I know what it was. There was some other people that became the same way, but they think it was might have been some type of virus that had caused
yeah.
this.
Mm-hmm.
So they had done the same thing, but then they became well. They became responsive. So the husband rushes to the cemetery and digs her up. And when he digs her up, they find where she has clawed the coffin, you know, and her face is just in this mortified, you know, frozen in this mortified look, you know, expression, that she had pulled her fingernails out trying to get out. So he buries his baby. He buried his wife that he thought had already passed, and then had to turn around and bury her a second time. And he never really recovered from that.
Right.
He lived to be an old man, but he never married again. He never had any other children besides that. And that would have just been terrible.
Is that particular area, does that particular area have a lot of activity around it?
It does.
I would think it would, yes.
It's been said that they can hear a woman in the cemetery, and you can hear her crying at
uh-huh.
night.
Uh-huh.
This location isn't but about 2.5 hours from where I live.
My goodness.
I've been there several times, but I've not been to the cemetery as of yet.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, there is talk of a lot of activity around that area concerning her.
Yes.
And see, they would take and tie bells. They ended up tying bells. so that if someone was not dead, you know, they would watch this bell. And if the bell, they would leave someone out there and they would sit with this. And if the bell started ringing, they needed to dig up, you know, they go and dig it back up. So,
right.
You know, we've gone from that to now, which I think is a lot better. But, you know, they just went through a lot. And you think about how many people that they may have buried that were not dead.
That's right. And when you talked about the lady, you know, crying and the mournful cry, that reminds me of the house over in Surrey where the cemetery is in the back of the house. And my son and I went out there at one night, and that was really all that it took for me to actually hear a woman in a mournful cry for her loved ones or children that had passed on. And I stood there and listened, and it saddened me to hear it. I wanted so much to go near it, but my son told me not to, that was something you did not do. And you know, and he had looked into it, and this place dated back to the early, I believe it was near the 1900s, but it was the same effect. It's something where people go to seek out the paranormal activity of it because of the cemetery behind it and her crying at night. So it's something that there are two, like you said, that's in Kentucky. And then there's a place here that has the same effect, and it's interesting to be able to know that in different states there are same circumstances.
Mhm. Now I come across with something here that's really piqued my interest. I mean, it is here in Kentucky. As of right now, I'm not going to give the exact location of this, but I am going to discuss it. I learned that there was a, and it's completely totally different. It changes this whole thing around what I'm getting ready to tell. But I had learned about a UFO crash site, and I became somewhat intrigued by it because I had not heard of one here in Kentucky. So doing some research about it. So this site in particular not only had the UFO crash, but it also has paranormal activity. There is a sarcophagus that is buried, well, it's down in a cave. I wouldn't actually say it's buried, but it's down off in a cave. And they believe it dates back to the early 1600s, maybe Spaniards, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they've talked about what I would think, what they described as a gargoyle-type entity with wings. Makes me think of Mothman in particular because of the way it was described. But it had injured one of the dogs that these people have. And then these are like pretty good sized guard dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was hurt because this creature or whatever it was attacked this dog. And I've learned about all kinds of stuff. I mean, even right down to Bigfoot sightings. There was a Bigfoot sighting probably between 5 to 10 miles from where I live. And it's on a real desolate stretch of highway here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, I go out, I paranormal investigate, you know, and I do this all the time with my team, and there's no issue with it. I know the dangers of it. I know what I'm getting into when I go.
Right. Right.
But when I've read about the Bigfoot sighting, I actually became slightly nervous to drive that road because of the story. But the thing with that is Bigfoot is not anything new. You know, it dates back to Native American history.
Yeah.
And they consider them, and they call them the ancient ones.
Yeah.
And you don't bother them.
No.
With Native culture, you do not bother a Bigfoot. You let the Bigfoot, you know, if you see one, you know, consider yourself honored to see one. but
yeah.
you know, you don't bother them.
No.
And you know, there's just so much that goes with that, and then the paranormal, and then Native
yeah.
culture. It all combines when you sit down and really start thinking about it. But you know, I'm just fine. Like I said, I'm big into history. I love history. You know, and as far as the topic we started out with Mary Queen of Scots, you know, I've been fascinated with her for several years now.
That's wonderful.
And
that,
and they go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I was just saying how wonderful it was. It's so interesting. It's something that you sparked my interest on it. I had never thought, you know, in history of, you know, because I focused so much on what's in our country and the paranormal activities in different places, such as like you and I were talking earlier when I was telling you about the Winchester House and those type of things where famous mediums and psychics have gone, and this house continues to grow and things like that. And to me, that's awesome enough. But you know, to learn about another country, and when I heard you say that they were not happily married, right away I thought, didn't history repeat itself then? When you think of the late Princess Diana and Prince Charles and how it all came out that they were not happily married, you know, and yet she tried to hurt herself instead of somebody hurting her. And it makes you think, you know, that seems that in that particular area, in that country, history continues to repeat itself over and over. Hopefully not again ever, now that we have a new prince and princess of Cambridge, and they seem to be a beautiful couple. And but before them, I noticed I was going back and I thought to myself, well, history repeated itself all the way through the ages, all the way through the centuries. And that's very interesting, and then that's why I asked about the difference between the men and the woman, you know, because the woman always seemed to be the ones who suffered the most.
They did, and you know, in a lot of ways, even today, women still suffer. You know, maybe not quite as severe as what it was in the Middle Ages and so forth, but you know, we still had those. We still have that stereotype, you know, when it comes to men and women, you know, that men can do the job better, you know, women can't do as much as men can. So that's still there. But the only difference with that then to now is we don't go through arranged marriages. You
No.
know, we get to pick and choose
No.
who we want to marry.
And that's right.
And with the new, you're talking about the prince and the new princess, you know, they built their marriage on love. Their marriage
yeah.
was, they married out of love. So maybe that'll start something new, and it'll make things a lot different for that country. But, you know, in Scotland and all that, they have so much history, so many castles and, you know, with many, many ghost stories over there. And they, you know, as far as Mary goes, they talk about, you know, seeing a woman, a headless woman, in a white, dressed in white, and she's always spotted in the castle's old tower, and they believe that it is in fact Mary Queen of Scots. Now, and see, the only thing that she really did wrong, in my opinion, was that she lost her first husband. It was never proven, in fact, that she actually killed him. They never proved that she did it. It was only on suspicions, and
right.
that they thought the new husband done it. But she fell in love. She actually fell in love with this man. She was in arranged marriage with the first one.
Yes.
He was her cousin. they really had little in common with each other. You know, he did his thing, she did hers, but they expected them to have children. I'm not sure if they did. I think there's a possibility that she did have a child by him, but I don't want to say for sure, for definite on that. But, you know, it was just so much time. During that time, she was expected, you know, she had the role of queen, but at the same time, she was to produce heirs to the throne.
And that's where I compared the late Princess Diana, because they expected the same thing from her. And mind you, she was in our time and age, and yet they immediately expected her to produce an heir, which was Prince William, you know, and Prince Harry, you know, to the throne, should, you know, it ever be necessary to take over. And she was not happy. And it basically, again, was an arranged marriage, you know. And I've always taken an interest in Princess Diana. I thought she was a beautiful lady with a lot of class and dignity and self-respect and pride, and very sadly unhappy. And that's what, and evidently over in England and Scotland, they did expect, you know, the woman to produce heirs no matter whether they were happy or not. Happiness had no play in it. And I don't know how the ladies then did it, but it shows their strength. It shows how strong that they were to be able to stand in there and, you know, and do that, and yet uphold themselves as queen and conduct the title and yet be unhappy.
Exactly. Exactly right. And, you know, and wave and smile at everybody when they were cued to do so.
Yes.
You know, and portray themselves as this happy, you know, lady of the country. You know, someone that was happy with her everyday life when, in fact, she wasn't.
Right.
So, yeah, I know what you're saying. You know, I mean, you take into account that, let's see, what was that king? Trying to think of his name. He killed. He had like 8 wives, and you know which one I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yes, I do. Yes, I'm gonna say, was it King George?
No.
No.
Anybody in the chat room remember his name? That would be a great help, because I know his name and
King
I cannot
Philip?
Think of his name. It was King Louis the Eighth, I think.
King Louis the Eighth. That's right. Yes. Thank you. Yes. It was okay for him to have 8 wives, but if a lady were to have 8 husbands, oh shame.
Well, you have to remember he had most of his wives put to death.
Yes, he did. Yes. And
all
see
but
if
a, one or two.
I can't help but laugh. If us women were to have all our husbands put to death, we'd be in bad shape. I'm sorry,
yeah,
I can't help
but
laugh, because it's just a stereotype.
It is, and it's a major stereotype when it comes down to it, you know, because, you know, they're man, you know. You know, if I decide I don't want you, you know, we'll just send you to the chopping block, you know, that's okay, and I'll marry the next one, you know, in the next day or two, because that was what he'd done. You know, he didn't waste any time. And, of course, I'm looking at this, and he had one wife that had, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 children.
Oh, my.
All of them were boys. Well, I don't know about the first four. The first four were all stillborn. But then he had two. And, of course, he had his mistresses on the side, you know. That was a big thing in the day. And I still don't see where it says there he beheaded his women. But not King Louis. I might be thinking about a different one completely. But, you know, they, Queen Elizabeth's first father. And I still can't think of his name, but yeah, he was a bad man in his day. You know, he got tired of a woman. You know, we'll just send you to the chopping block. One of them got lucky and divorced her. And I think the last one was with him when he died, and he died of old age, because he was an older man, and he wanted an heir to the throne and so forth. But it's kind of messed up. So, yeah, women have come a long ways compared to what it was back then.
Oh, yes. I would say yes, we have. And, yes, the ladies have from over in that particular country also, because it seemed like if they were not of the right choosing, they were only around for a little while, and then they obviously disappeared for permanently. And even in different cultures around the world, there are some cultures that allow men still today to have more than one, two, three wives, but they don't do away with them. They continue the marriage, and if one has an argument with one of them, then he knows he can go to the next wife and so on. But if woman were to have 10 husbands, what would the woman be called? There are different names that the woman would be called, yet we can't call that particular man who had 10 wives anything at all, except that it was allowed, and yet it is not allowed for a woman to have 10 husbands. And it's still today, from even in your culture and my culture, in certain tribes, men are allowed to have more than one wife, and that dates back to the 1700s when they did, and they had different wives, and believe it or not, all these wives got along very, very well, and they shared the chores of the tribes and so on, and they were well respected and everything. It was amazing to see this. And so I up and asked one of the tribe's people one day if they still practice this, and quietly it was said, to an extent, but not a lot anymore. And I said, well, that's good, because it's not fair that the wife a woman couldn't have 3 to 4 husbands. And if she got tired of the first one, go on to the next one and be okay with it. That was not allowed, and it still isn't allowed today.
Non in the chat room corrected me. It was actually Henry VIII that had all the wives.
Oh.
That when he was tired of them, you know,
he
would do something to them, and. I think there was only one or two that was actually lucky and survived.
And made it.
Yeah. It's just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
That is amazing. Mm-hmm. That is amazing, you know, that especially for that history to be down in paper, you know, that this is what this particular king did, and yet, thank goodness today it's not the same.
Mm-hmm. Now, Henry VIII, and I was looking through his he had, I believe it was 8 wives, something to that effect, and Elizabeth the First was the only child of Henry the Eighth and Anne Boleyn. Now, she didn't bear a son for him, and 3 years later, he had her executed.
Executed.
He executed her. And just, it was because she couldn't have a son.
Isn't that amazing? And how did he know that she couldn't have a son? How, back in those days, they weren't able to do the fertilization and technology that they have today.
True. Well, see, she suffered, they believe that she suffered at least 2 miscarriages.
Miscarriages.
After she had Elizabeth. And then on May 2nd, 1536, she was arrested and hastily convicted on charges of adultery, incest, and witchcraft, and they beheaded her 17 days later.
And you know, that is amazing that you say that, because even here in Virginia, at historic Colonial Williamsburg, they tell the history of the woman, not the men, the woman that were beheaded, executed, accused, whatever word you want to put in there, of all of those things, of witchcraft, of adultery, and of everything that they thought was criminal in those days. And they even have the chopping blocks where they chop the head off, still in Williamsburg, where they can reenact that particular crime, and where they did away with the ladies they put them in what, and there is a lot of paranormal activity in the original insane asylum there in Williamsburg, where they considered the women who were going through the change of life, they called them crazy, psychotic, and they thought they were practicing witchcraft and doing spells and all these things, and it was simply the change of life. And because that they did not understand this, they locked them away in a little room. And if you go into the original one, there are still drawings on the walls, things that give you the shivers if you look at it. And you can sometimes, they say, if you go in at a certain time, you can hear the screams. And mind you, this insane asylum was only where they put women. Men were not put in there. Men were of the higher status. They were the ones where everything was okay. They even had a Playboy it's called the Randolph House. And the Playboy had all kinds of mistresses and night parties and gatherings and mind you, alcohol, of course, being distributed. And he would sleep with all the different mistresses he had. But the women were the ones who suffered intensely and suffered so greatly and ended up in this insane asylum because they were no longer, in their 20s or early 30s. And when they reached the change of life stage, they were considered crazy. But it was okay. I was going to say it was okay for this playboy to have his fun every night.
Right. Well, see, that's like, he's talking about even with the Salem witch trials. It was similar, but at the same time, they were condemning people to death, just because maybe they didn't act the way that their society at that time thought they should. You know, maybe someone was defiant and they decided, okay, I don't want to live this way. This is the way I want to live. This is something different, you know, and I want to try this instead. Or, and I've learned that, you know, if you were left-handed, if you were a redhead, you know, they would burn you because they mm-hmm. considered you Satan's child, you know. You were a witch and that was that, you know. Or if you wasn't obedient to the teachings or you just was just, I don't know, like a rebel, so to speak.
Right, right,
you know?
Right.
It was all about what their belief was, and because they had that belief, they wasn't open to the thought that maybe another person had their own mind.
Exactly.
And was able to think for themselves. So because they decide to think for themselves and not do what they were expected to do, they were put to death for it.
Exactly. And also, if the lady did not get along, or if she was different in her ways, or believed or loved the earth and loved gardening or something, they considered her growing her plants of some type of witchcraft, that she would grow from the ground and right here in Williamsburg, and they would if she did not socialize in the woman's circle and she was one of her own, as you say, with her own mind and her own thoughts and her own ways and her own way of living, they considered that particular woman a witch, and she was put to death because she was different, because she wanted to live a different path and a different journey and a different life, and she wasn't in the large velour gowns and the woman of the night, so to speak, and because she was different and believed in the different things and maybe was gifted with the ability to grow herbs and gifted with the ability to know how to use them to cure or to cook or to help or what have you. If she didn't participate in the large governor's palace and the parties that went on there, then she was the odd one, as they would say, or the different one. And of course, now today we look to those women and we call them medicine women. But the thing is, back then they were called something else.
That's true. And you know, it's the whole thing with the medieval. It should really, if we look at it, there should be a lesson to be learned with all that. And I think what that is that no two people are alike. No
right.
one thinks the same. Everybody,
right.
you know, is their self, and they think for themselves. You know, there was so many people that died because they did think for themselves.
That's
you know,
right.
They believed at that time to force people into their belief or what have you. And herbs and all that, you know, it was, you know, maybe someone knew what to put together to take one herb out or to fix with another to remedy something. It was, you know, all these plants that we have around us, you know, they're there for a reason. You know,
yeah.
there's something that they can be used for that can help an illness or what have you. You know, but you had people that were smart enough, or they grew up with families that had this stuff passed down to them.
Yeah.
You know, that, and they knew to do this, but because they knew to do this, you know, then they became a danger. They became a threat because maybe they could teach someone else, you know, what their word was not all there was.
Right.
You know, that they're more there than what there really was, you know, not just this one person saying, like, with, oh, gosh, back in the 1800s with tonics, you know. Those tonics, in all reality, was just stuff that was thrown together, and most of them had arsenic in it. Now,
yeah.
If you take arsenic and a person that is Native American that grew up using all this different stuff,
mm-hmm.
they know how to take arsenic and use it to doctor somebody.
Exactly.
You know, but you take some of these people out here and they've made it dangerous to use because they add too much to it. You know,
exactly.
And then they've learned what arsenic can do to you if you take it in too much quantity.
That is
so
true.
It's all about knowing who you are, you know, what your belief is, and not letting someone else tell you that you cannot think for yourself.
Damn, that
you know,
is so true.
You have to read between the lines when it comes, you know, when it comes to a lot of this stuff, you read between the lines, and however you perceive it, you know, then you use it the way you see it.
I applaud you. That was that's excellent way to be able to say exactly what you want to say and have the public understand exactly what you mean coming from your heart and from your spirit. That is wonderful to hear, and I hope that many people take that in tonight and realize that. I just applaud you for saying that. That's wonderful to hear.
Well, thank you. And I guess we're coming down to the end of our show. We actually have about 4 minutes left. And I want to thank everybody that was in the chat room this evening to listen. I do apologize that our guest has not called in. But there is a time zone between me and him, us and him, because he's out in, I believe it's in the Dakotas is where he's at. So there's about a 3-hour time zone limit there or difference. So hopefully soon we can get him on air because he does want to come on and talk about his work. And definitely go to his Facebook page and look at his artwork because he is truly amazing. His name is Farron Blakely. And I want to thank you for coming on again. You're a great friend. And
thank
I think
you.
The world of you, and I love you. You're my sister.
I love you too, and you are my sister. And the sisterhood that we share in our culture and everything, we have walked a long journey together, and I cherish every all the good, the bad, the thick, the thins, everything that we could write a book about what we've been through. But
we really could.
Yes, we could. And but I'll tell you something, it took a great deal of strength, and we did it as sisters, and we did it, and I pat both of us on our backs because it took a lot to work through the many situations that we had to work through together as a team, to go through as many things as we did, and come out with the right choices, the right decisions, the right answers, and give it long studies of time and thought and discussion. So I think we have done very well.
I think so too. And I also wanted to say real quick before we end it, we got about a minute, 17 seconds left. If anybody's interested in wanting to know more about my team is Afterlife Investigations of Kentucky. You can find us on Facebook. Someone is always on there, so feel free to stop by and say hello. My Facebook is on there as well. It's under K Miles 2. So hope to see you guys. Stop by and say hello, and definitely hope to see you guys next week for the next show. And may everyone have a great evening and good night.
Good night.
stand.